will sell Salan Zatzal, Nosa Palm, Lamokum Rahok Kadela de Be, a Liboy Shal Echad Hamaskilim, the Nasais Lachzira Bachuva. Will sell Salan was very involved in Kiruv, people don't realize. He was known for being the founder of the Muslim movement. People don't realize he was very involved in Kiruv. The best of my knowledge, he was Nifte in Paris.
Who
was this? Yeah. Rabbi Sol Salanta was Nifte in Paris. What was he doing in Paris? He was doing Kiruv.
Buried in Paris.
Wow. He was doing Kiruv, yeah. Wow. To the best of my knowledge, I don't know if he was buried in Paris. Or they moved.
I think so.
Is he buried in Paris? I don't know. I'm not a big... to the best of my knowledge, he was Nifte and he's buried in Paris. He was buried in Kiruv there. Anyway, he went to Bo meet with one of the Maskilim to try and get him to Machzir B'Tshuva. When Yeta Dvorim Hiski Lo Reb Yisrael Esanisim Agedolim Shenasul Avoseni B'Mitzrayim. One of the things he did to Moiri was he mentioned and discussed the Nisim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us B'Mitzrayim. As we saw, that Tzadik V'Toiv Lo Tekufa, we need to get very mechazeked in that in order to be able to deal with the Tzadik V'Ra Lo Tekufa that we're in. There was the Hachonah for the real work. As a maskil toin, ki einu ma'amin chas v'chelila b'kol ha'dvorim alolu. I don't believe in all this stuff. I wasn't there, I didn't see it, and I don't believe in it. Im HaKadosh Baruch Hu nimtze, madu einu magales atzmai achshav? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nimtze, if there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, so why doesn't he show himself now? What, he forgot how to do nisim? He knew how to do nisim, now he's got old, what, he can't do them anymore. Do them now, what's the problem? As Rabbi Yisrael lo heishiv lo, he didn't answer. Which is sometimes the best thing to say. When a time nichnasu bito akatana shel oisa maskil asher choincha al yadoi kemeiti v'chinuch hamoderni. His daughter came in who had received the best of the modern education that the maskilim could afford to give their children. V'hatziga b'gaives tudat hatzenut shela k'rakdanit muduflemes shel beit seifa goy. She came with her certificate of being the best dancer in this Goyisha school. She got she won the prize at the dance contest or whatever. Yeah. As a maskil Rav Yiddish Anachas, he was getting a lot of Yiddish Anachas from this. Mi bita am akademis va noira. Ulochenu itzig es tudab if nei risol zatzal. So he was showing off. He's got so much nachas from this daughter Nebuch that he showed her he showed her risol the slant to the tudah. Rabbi Yisrael Omer, ki einu ma'amin l'tudazeh. Rabbi Yisrael said, I don't believe this.
Play for me.
Ki rak danit l'mofati, ulochein alei l'rkod l'fonov. You want me to show you that your daughter is the best dancer in the world? She must dance in front of me. I don't believe this thing. Mi omash is a stickle paper. It's not worth anything. Habat nifka ad amken nishmosa. She was very insulted. Vrama v'buz la'avir ki bishvil zoken zeh min ha'chashuchim. From this old man from the dark ages, it's Tariq Rikor. He made him Amin Shiloh Yamin. He doesn't want to believe. Don't believe. Well, I'm not dancing in front of him, which I think was a brocha because he would have had a few problems if she decided to dance.
I heard the version of his.
It was a piano player. It makes it easier. Yeah. Okay.
More sneers.
Yeah, it's easier. It doesn't matter because at the end of the day she didn't.
No,
it's okay. Right. Yeah, for sure. No, he understood. Rabbi Yisrael was a very insightful. I'm a Rabbi Yisrael Maskil. You got an answer to your question. What was your question? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu was around, wasn't he dance for us? HaKadosh Baruch Hu kvar rakad lifneinu b'meshech kol alpaim shnei steira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself and performed for us miracles, open miracles. Hu gila es yacholtoi ve'es shlitoso b'kol olam. He showed his ability and he showed his shlita on every aspect of the bria. V'yesh anu gam tu darakach. And we have a certificate of this. Hatudahi a Torah Kedosha. Ashenim Sura Lanu Ish Mipnish. We have a Torah that was handed from father to son, from father to son, from Ada Yom Azeh. We're any Tarech Lit Kod Lefonai Kisaf Nomath Bakbek, because we have Sveikas and we're not sure. He doesn't have to dance in front of us. Believe. You don't believe. He has the Tuda. You either believe it or you don't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Giles Avoso Aleinu Ba'apayim Shnois Torah. In the 2000 years of Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed to us how much he loves us. We had betochen in him and he gave us everything. The tough kids changed. We said right in the beginning, Chochemus Mekiris Makoimoi. If you're going to try and live and do the tough kid of a Jew living in Alpaim Shnot Torah, today you're going to miss the boat completely. That's not a tough kid. The tafkid is not to live with Nisim Galuim and to live in Anaya Kovod and eat man and bear Miriam and Kabbalah. That's not our tafkid. Our tafkid is to Megala the love we have for Kodesh Baruch Hu when it's not obvious. When it's not obvious. But you need that first stage in order to know what the reality is. Now you have to go into the second phase and build it and do it yourself. I think we mentioned this many times, but it needs chizuk. It needs chizuk all the time. The Tetzis brings us down in Living Inspired. It's basically the Rabbeinu Tam in the Shariyosha. Shariyosha, it's a Yesod Godel in Kula Tere Kula. The Derech Hashem discusses this. Every aspect of the Bria, the entire purpose of the Bria, is based on three phases. There's three stages to everything. If you've heard this and you're bored with this, just stop me, because we don't have to go through it again. Everybody heard the three phases of reality? Okay, let's go through it again. There's some confused faces here. So, the whole Bria, there's nothing in the Bria that doesn't work according to these three phases, and the macrocosmic Bria is based on these three phases as well. We were with HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time, right? And Hashemah's come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when we finished our little journey in this world, where are we going to be? Back to where we were before we started. So what do we have to come down here for? Just stay where you were. That's the obvious question. So the answer we've learned is because the Kodesh Baruch wants to be mated, and in order to have the ultimate good, we have to earn it. So therefore, Kodesh Baruch put us down here in this world in order to earn it. So when we go back, the relationship we have with the Kodesh Baruch after being here is an earned relationship as opposed to a freebie, which is what you had before.
You could also lose your place.
Almost impossible. You have to be really, really, really good. It'd be really, really evil to lose your place. It's not so possible. There's very few Jews in history, the Chazal B'Gan, have actually lost their place. But you're out. There's a danger. if it wouldn't be real, it wouldn't be real. It's got to be earned, of course, of course.
Are you saying you're guaranteed to become back higher than you were?
No, I'm not saying anything. I'm just telling you that's how the phase works. That's how the Misgeret works. I'm not going into all the questions yet. I'm not going, Anna, that's not our subject. That's a subject of Bechira and Sachav or Enish. That's not a subject there. Subject is just to understand the skeletal form of this malachic, that's all. Many kashas, I'm not saying not. So you see this pattern, if this pattern exists in the macrocosm, it has to exist in everything. Stage one is always a stage of enormous inspiration, of getting things for free. That was Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim. They didn't have done anything to earn that. Those enormous giluim, Mashero Shifcha Beyamsuf Yecheskel Ben Buzi never saw, what did she do to earn that? She was exposed to my separation. She saw the highest dagas of Torah that a human being can see. What did she do? She sat and learned for 150 years. Well, how did she earn them? Nothing. Total artificial inspiration. You get lifted up, and that's always stage one. That's Pesach. That's Leila Seder, Leil Shimurim. The results say you can achieve on Leila Seder things you can't achieve any other night of the year, because there's free energy available. That in and of its own is useless. What are you going to do with that? You've got a freebie. So what are you going to do with that? That's just there to inspire you. Then you get dumped into the darkness. That's by yourself crossing the sea and going into the midbar. It's a place where there's no ruchnias at all. And you have to rebuild yourself back to Shavuos. But when you get there, you've earned it. The 49 days between, the 50 days, 49 days between Pesach and Shavuos is where you rebuild yourself. That's what Sfiras Hayim is. That period of counting the 50 days is a period of rebuilding yourself back to what you looked like just before you crossed the sea. But you've done it now yourself. So those are the three phases. The phase of artificial inspiration, the dark phase where you have to build it and do it yourself, and then ultimately getting back what you had in the inspiration stage, but you've earned it. You said in marriage, the pattern is very, very clear in marriage. Boy meets girl, they date, they get very, very inspired, the violence start playing, everything's mamash glorious or whatever. 3 days after the Sheva Brochas, he comes into your office and he's like sweating and devastated, and because he married the wrong girl, right? And then what they do is they get divorced and they try again, and then they live in phase one for the rest of their lives. That's the whole point. You got shown what you're capable of achieving, and then it gets taken away from you, so you're going to spend the next 60, 70 years working together to get back to that phase. And it's in everything like that in life. I think Rabbi Tetz has a shiur called Why Don't the Good Times Last? I think that's the name of the shiur. I think that's obvious why it's called that. And we know that ourselves. The beginning of the Zaman is always, everybody will tell you, the first week or two I was Zman. People always ask me the first week of Zman, how's the Zman going? But don't ask me now, ask me in a few weeks. Because the first two or three weeks of Zman's always going well. Everyone's inspired and everyone's learning and everyone's steiging. It's like 3 weeks later when the wheels come off and then everyone's crashing and falling apart and then the Zman doesn't look so good. You know, it's... We know it ourselves. We know ourselves. We start a new project. We're very inspired. We get very like fired up and whatever. And then there's that long, dark female phase. Phase one is always a male phase. Phase two is always a female phase. If you look at it, you'll work it out for yourself biologically. That's our childhood. Male phase is a phase of incredible, incredible inspiration, an enormous flash and burst of inspiration. Okay, that lasts very little time. The next phase is a dark, dangerous, difficult phase. The female phase. Where she, in a hidden, dark place, builds exactly the coding that he gave her to build. And then the child's born. You have exactly what the male had right in the beginning. You now have the exact product that he gave her to build. But she built it in that dark middle phase. This world is phase two. This world is phase two. I think that's obvious. Phase one is Olam HaNeshama, Kisakov, whatever that's called. And phase three is going to be Olam Haba. This is phase two. So the same year, we had Yetzias Mitzrayim, which was phase one. That's where we build our inspiration. That's where we understand what our relationship with Hashem looks like and is supposed to look like. But you haven't earned it yet. That's not fine. It's a freebie. You get it for nothing. Now you get Alpaim Shnois, Ikfasid HaMashiach, Yomos HaMashiach. And now you get to build it and develop it yourself. So if you're trying to live in phase one, when you really should be in phase two, like this guy that's getting divorced every 3 weeks because the violins stopped playing after the Sheva Brachas. Of course they stopped playing.
So where does
Kolat Cholos Kashos, which phase is that? It's probably phase one, right? Excellent question. Kolat Cholos Kashos means that it doesn't fall into any of these phases, it falls into Bechira. Kolat Cholos Kashos falls into the phase of Bechira. People make a mistake. People think, he's asked a question which is very important, not totally relevant to this, but it's an important practical question which people mix up, and it's kedah to know this. You'll find this very beneficial. People think Kolat Cholos Kashos works like this. I decide that I want to start getting up half an hour early every morning, okay, to learn half an hour before davening. Just an example. I'm not trying to scare anybody out of anything. Let's use an imaginary example that's never going to happen. So he thinks that the Kolat Cholos Kashos starts tomorrow morning when he's got to get out of bed. Right? That's where's Kolat Cholos Kashos? Is when he wants to get up tomorrow morning, half an hour early. He sets his alarm and then he gets out of bed tomorrow morning. It's going to be hard. And then slowly he'll get used to it and start getting out of bed earlier. It's a big mistake. That's not where Kolat Cholos stops. Kolat Cholos starts the day before when he makes the decision to get out of bed in the morning. That's what's hard. Once he's made the decision, he'll do it. The problem is actually making the decision and meaning it and nailing down the decision. That's what Chazal means, Kolat Cholos Kashos. I heard this from a Tziyahu Solomon in Toronto, actually. That's where I heard it from him. Sitting in the bite. From a Tziyahu Solomon. He used to spend Shabbos in sometimes. I don't know if you were involved. Okay, he used to come to Toronto for one Shabbos a year. Usually the Shabbos either just before Shavuos or just after Shavuos. And I used to make a point of being there on my fundraising trips when he was there. So I used to spend Shabbos with him. Anyway, he was in the bite speaking, and afterwards I asked him this, and he told me he had a pasuk. I can't remember what the pasuk is. There's a raya that he has from a pasuk, and I can't remember what the pasuk is. But Kolat Cholos Kashos is at the bechira stage. Once you've made that decision where it hurts, how often does that happen to us? Look at it, you'll see. I really want to get up early tomorrow, whatever. Yeah, but it's hard. Or we'll think about it later. But when you nail down the decision, you know you've got to be at a bris tomorrow morning, right? You know, your brother's making a bris or whatever, and it's at 6 o'clock in the morning. How do you get there? Because the night before you made a decision that you're going to get up and you're ready to go. So when you wake up in the morning, it's a local kaf kasher. That's where Kolat Kashos starts. It starts in the planning stage before you even get to phase one. Well, something inspired you to want to do it. It probably, if you have to find a place where it exists, it probably exists between phase one and phase two. It's certainly in the phase two stage because it's your bechira. There's no bechira in phase one. Obviously, it's in phase two. The question is, where in phase two? Probably right at the beginning, before you. Yeah. That's what Rav Yisrael Salanter was telling. This is a deep mice. It's not just a nice, cute story about, you know, Hashem doesn't have to dance for us anymore. It's telling you that if you want Hashem to dance for you now, you're living in the wrong time. Your neshama experienced that. Your neshama now needs to do something else. There's another tafkid. The tafkid is not to know. The tafkid is to have timune and do based on your own koiches. I'll give you another simple example. I mentioned it also here before many times. A Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to you tonight and he tells you, hello, this is me. And let's say you know 100% sure that it's Hashem. Forget about how do you know. You know, okay, let's work on that hypothesis that you know for sure it's Hashem. And he says to you, tomorrow morning, I want you to go down before the sun rises to Masada, little mountain there opposite the Yamamela. I want you to climb up, or you can take the Rachbal if you want. I don't care how you get up there. Just get up to the top, whatever. Go yarin yarin there. Stand on the edge of a cliff. There's a 3,000 feet jump. I want you to jump as the sun comes up, right? But don't worry, I'll catch you. And then he disappears. So what do?
Stay in bed.
No, you know that Hashem told you to go to Masada and climb up to the top of Masada and go to this place. So you go. Now you're standing on the edge of the cliff. Do you jump? Do you jump or not? Well, whether you jump, why not? Hashem told you to jump and I'll catch you. So you understand, if you're thinking about this carefully, if you jump, you jump as a process of imuna. Lahagid baboike chazdecho, that's phase one. Lahagid baboike chazdecho, in the morning when the lights are on and you can see the chesed of Hashem, lahagid baboike chazdecho, ve'emunos chobaleilos, when it's dark and you don't have the clarity that you had last night, are you faithful to what you knew yesterday? That's what imuna is. Imuna means being faithful to what you knew. That's phase two. Phase two is always the phase of imuna. Phase one is the phase of knowing, of knowledge, direct experience. Phase two is always the doubt. Did Hashem really tell me this? Did it really happen? Why does Hashem want me to do this? Look at all the suffering. Look at all the nisoinus that generates doubt. And the imuna is what enables you to override that phase by being faithful to what you knew. Imuna doesn't mean blind faith. It means we know. We went down to Mitzrayim, Hashem this, he gave us a Torah, blah, 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 but we don't have that experience now. And Alpha became I'm a mami. Sadiq be Musri Yichya. What is das? And that's phase two, and that's the phase of Ikfas the Mashiach. Phase three will be Olam Abba, Yemos HaMashiach. Very important to remember this, even in the microcosm and the macrocosm, many things in our lives. We get very fired up and inspired, and then we, whatever, and then we give up because, you just missed the plot. Now's the time to build it. I think Rebecca once put it very nicely. He says, if you're sleeping in a first floor apartment, yeah, or in the coal cellar, yeah, and you suddenly wake up in the penthouse suite, and you don't know how you got up there, don't sign a title deed, because you're falling back again. If you know how you got up there, that's fine, you can stay there. But if you don't know how you got there, don't stay there, because don't plan on staying there, because you're going to get dumped down again. If you suddenly find yourself on this very high level, like ask yourself, how did I get here? If you don't know how you got there, this is phase one, which means enjoy it while it lasts, because phase two is imminent. If you know how you got up there, fine, you've earned it, you've worked for it, that's now your new level. Hold on to it. Okay. Yeah, you prepare for it.
You're gonna get the gift.
Depends what the story is. If it's marriage, let's say, for example, you have to prepare the couple very, very well, with the right kind of Kosanan kind of teachings and shmuzim and aponas and whatever, in order to be able to deal with phase two. It starts before that. A child has to be machanach to know that life's not a picnic, that life's hard, and we're not in this world for freebies. I mean, the child will pick that up by osmosis, by the way parents deal with nishoinus and difficulties. The child will be machanach to know that life's not simple. And in this generation, it's almost impossible, because this generation is teaching our children that life's easy and a picnic and everything's just supposed to be nice and easy. How many times do you hear kids saying today, but it's hard? You give them a great idea, you give them a wonderful eitzah, right? And they understand that. And how do they get out of it? But it's hard.
I never heard my grandfather getting out of doing something he had to do by saying it's hard. He understood it was hard. If it was, and my father always used to say, if it was easier to get the Schwarzes to do it. So of course it's hard. Of course it's hard. This needs a Yiddish shakop. Of course it's hard. The easy stuff you give the Schwarzes to do. Unfortunately, we live in a generation where hard has become a swear word. Kids don't want to meet their mates. They don't want to, you know. And they live in a world where they see you don't have to. Why? You have to work hard. Guys are making billions of dollars by pushing a few buttons and going back to bed. You know, it wasn't so long ago where you wanted to make money to work. Today, there's 20-year-old kids making millions and millions but doing nothing. And that's the world we grow up in, so that's what gets absorbed into our kishkas. And Chanukah children are knowing that the only thing they're ever going to get sipuk from is the things that they worked hard for. To find difficult challenges for your kids to overcome. So they get a taste of that sipuk from doing difficult things, so they want to do it. The things you get easy and you get for nothing, you don't get enjoyment out of. Two people go up Mount Everest. Doesn't last. Two people go up Mount Everest. The one climbed up, the other got dropped there by helicopter. Who enjoys the view more? You know, 6 months later, he's still telling you about. He's still living off the vibrancy, the excitement, the schmuck, the feeling of success. We know that. It's with everything. That's the deliciousness of learning Torah, no? You battle and struggle and grope, and you don't know what's going on, and it's like this is ridiculous, and you want to cry from pain from not understanding what's going on. And then suddenly, boom, you get it, you get it. Isn't it more delicious in the world than that? And you see that in secular stuff as well. You have a difficult problem to solve, and you sit down and you work it, and you go. That's where you get your sipuk from. Because getting everything for nothing doesn't give you that sipuk. That's why she created the whole world in the first place. Because if you would have given us everything for nothing, it wouldn't have been that enjoyable. That's why he sent us down here for 120 years to work and earn it. So that you have the sipuk from it. And this generation is exactly the opposite of this. This generation wants everything easy. No wonder they're depressed. Why is America the most depressed nation that ever was? They have everything. Americans live today and standard of living, I'll speak about this more tomorrow in the breakfast share, but Americans live today with a standard of living that 100 years ago the greatest millionaires never lived like the average American lives today. And they're totally depressed. Why?
Everyone's on pills.
Off the doctor, he'll tell you. Everyone's depressed. They're miserable. They're killing each other. They're miserable. Not just America. I'm talking about American-orientated society. They're miserable, depressed. Why? What happened?
Because they have to know what is good for us, not what is.
All I'm saying is, when you get something for nothing, it leaves you empty. When you work for something, you earn it. You struggle for it. You battle for it. You get it. You have sipuk. I grew up in South Africa, and I was in the third world as parts of South Africa in the rural areas or whatever. I'm telling you, the Schwarzes in the rural areas are much happier than the Schwarzes in the cities. And they have much less. I mean, I'm talking about financially. I'm talking about the Schwarzes that have made it in South Africa, the rich Schwarzes, let's call them. They are depressed and miserable. The Schwarzes living in the rural areas or whatever are, by and large, very, very happy and contented and satisfied with life. Fun, but I'm just using it as an example. Go to other countries or whatever. I travelled the East for quite a while. You're going to places like Nepal, you're going to places like India, whatever, to the rural areas, the poverty stricken areas. People are happy, they're taking antidepressants. And they have a rough life. But they get up in the morning and they have a vibrant life, and they you can see they're living a simple, even though the challenges are daunting. In America, you get out of bed in the morning.
That's
the point. I said it, but I'm saying. I'm saying we need the struggle and the challenge. If I just give you Torah easy, you're not going to get any sipuk out of it. Reading art soul can also make you depressed.
If someone is rich, make a lot of tzedakah.
Of course! No, I'm not saying being rich is going to make you depressed. I'm saying not making an effort and not challenging and not battling. Yeah. If you just get it all easy, you get depressed. We know that rich kids who inherited their wealth, we know what they look like after a while. There are very few rich kids, okay, that inherited enormous wealth that stayed anywhere near sane. They got destroyed. There are few rare examples. Few rare examples of inherited wealth where they actually were able to maintain their own integrity.
But most times it ruins it. By the time the grandchildren come along, it's a disaster.
Because the level of the Yetzirara is also higher if you're rich.
It's not high, it's different.
Yeah.
A rich man has a struggle with how to give away his money. A poor man has a struggle with how not to steal. That's what Shlomo Melech said. But looking for easy the whole time leaves you very, very empty. Getting everything easy. The story of the spoiled kid. The spoiled kid is a spoiled kid. He's been spoiled. It's hard today because the kids don't want to, they don't understand it. They don't want to be tamed. And you can't expect them to because the world around them is telling them not to.
As well, the boys that are in Kollel, supported by their families.
No, it depends.
Some of them are getting everything, handouts for free, living nice homes.
The poor kids in Kollel.
It's easy learning 12 hours a day.
Once again. I'm just saying it depends on the guys, meters and whatever. I happen to know a couple of, and you know them as well, a couple of really, really rich people. Super rich that inherited their wealth, that are sitting and learning, okay? That are the biggest mention, the biggest Baal Midas and Bnei Torah and normal people that you'll ever meet in your life. Depends on your upbringing, it depends on your Midas, it depends on your Bechir or whatever. Of course. I don't think that's generally a problem. You might find kids that, they have this entitlement kind of story, whatever, and they grow up to be behemoths like that, but the others, they don't. There are plenty of kids sitting and learning whose parents are poor that are supporting them in learning as well.